B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
I get all that, but the guy starts 7 games last season. He's all corners and tackles, interceptions. I like the kid just makes plays. Mm-hmm. I understand he gets beat every now and then. Happens to every corner. Every corner in football, even the great ones, they get beat every now and then.
Yeah, and I thought Russell Douglas got incrementally better with every start he made.
Yeah, and yet somehow still can't get the job.
Well, here's what's interesting, and Trey referenced this earlier. Did you have, I know you had Jalen Mills down because of the injury.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But it's Ronald Darby, and did you have Sidney Jones as the other starting corner?
Yeah, they have Sidney Jones as the other starting corner.
Jeez, that's that's crazy to me.
I don't get it. I mean, I kind of get it. Sidney Jones was a first-round talent. You got him in the second round because of the injury. You want to see what you got. But he has got Russell Douglas, who you've seen what you got, and it's actually pretty good.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Here's what's impressed me about Russell Douglas. He just wants to play. And he's in a lot better shape than he was last year. He came into camp in a lot better shape through mini camp, through OTAs. I had the opportunity to talk to him, and I've said this before on the air. He just said, he's like, dude, I'll play linebacker if it means I get to get on the field more often. Like, because I talked to him about slimming down a little bit and tightening up for being a safety. And he's like, yeah, I want to play corner, I want to play safety, and I'll play linebacker if they need me to.
Yeah, I mean, he may be our next Malcolm Jenkins when Malcolm is ready to go, but... You got to get him starting. Like you said, he looks better every time he plays.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have an old game for us, Dennis?
I actually have two.
Okay.
And it may explain a lot to any of my friends who are listening, but we had a game called Stretch. Stretch involved a group of friends hanging out with a knife. And basically, player one takes one step. You got a pivot foot and a step, and that's it. They drop the knife. Player two now gets to take one step, pick up the knife, drop it somewhere else. It led to quite a few holes in hands.
Dennis, did you play this game in juvie? Where the hell was this? Was this like with a shiv?
The trailer park I lived in.
I remember this game.
No way. You
know? I swear to God I do, now that you're bringing it up. So, you would drop it, go to it, stretch out, drop it again, and the other guy had to be able to stretch long enough to get it. If he couldn't, you won. It wasn't dangerous.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it sounds very safe.
Except that there was a knife involved.
Nah. I mean, that was our second game, which apparently was so dangerous they weren't allowed to make it anymore, which is Jarts.
Yeah, Jarts. That was one of my favorite. Yes, you do. Lawn darts.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha. Dennis, good stuff, man. Appreciate it.
Put and then somebody had, like, bad aim in the Midwest, and somebody got hurt, and they discontinued it.
You're listening to 975 The Fan at WPN, Burlington, Philadelphia, broadcasting from the Xfinity studio, only from Comcast. Coming up at 8:50, we're going to talk to Jason Stark. 9:10, we're going to talk to Zach Berman, both from The Athletic. Wait a minute. This was a dangerous game because you'd be throwing the darts?
Well, you had two big circles that you put out. So it's similar to, like, horseshoes.
Okay.
But you would throw these darts, these lawn darts, and they did. They had, like, steel points at the end, and you would try to get them in the circle. So.
Hey, I need Sam in here immediately. She just had an instance on the phone with somebody. Apparently somebody just called and sang her a song and then hung up. I need to know about that. But first, in case you missed it, the Phillies had a bit of a rough one last night. You might have tried to watch the game early, then you might have went to bed during the 2-hour and 37-minute rain delay. But in case you missed it, things didn't necessarily go the Phillies' way. That's probably the easiest way to put it. And last night, they end up losing 7-2 to the Dodgers. They have an opportunity with Aaron Nola on the hill today to try to split the series. But in case people have missed this, the Phillies are a bad baseball team. I know that people wanted to look at this and go, oh, no, they're going to be fine. Look at this. They might be able to bounce back now. That win that they walk off with, that's going to be something to really get them going and start the momentum. Not for a bad baseball team.
No.
And the Phillies right now are a bad baseball team. And I look at the box score, right? You watch the game, you look at the box score, you just look, oh, wow, okay, 7 hits to 2 hits, 7 runs to 2 runs. This isn't, that's not that impressive. So you would look at that and go, wow, the Dodgers' bats got the best of the Phillies' pitchers, right? 7 runs, that kind of goes without saying. But if you listen to Gabe Kapler after the game, and we have the sound for you. Gabe, after the game last night, didn't see it that way. He saw, I guess, Nick Pivetta 2 and 1/3 innings.
Mm-hmm.
4 walks.
Mm-hmm.
Four walks from Nick Pivetta in 2 1/3. Allowed an earned run. Bullpen came in. Garcia, Nicasio, Davis. They come in. They allow a few more runs as well. It was pretty bad last night for Philly's pitching. The Dodgers definitely got the better of them, but not according to Puppy Dogs and Ice Cream, Gabe Kapler.
It seemed like both teams were having trouble putting the fat part of the bat on the ball. Certainly, we'd like to come out and swing the bats better than we did. We know that in order for us to beat a team like the Dodgers, we're going to have to score some runs, and we just weren't able to do that. It's bottom line. We got to do better.
This team can't do better. Like, I understand they're going to have flash-in-the-pan type games where Bryce Harper looks like the guy that, he's the MVP candidate, right? And then Rhys Hoskins is going to have good games, but he's in a little bit of a slump right now. Scott Kingery's been one of your more consistent players over the last three games since the All-Star break now. But, like, this team, it just needs to, like, admit to themselves that they're just not that good a baseball team. They are an incomplete team.
So, the Dodgers had no problem getting the fat bat, part of the bat on the ball on those two two-run home runs.
Yeah.
So, and don't sugarcoat it.
They walked 10 times. 10 times. Yeah. Gabe, they don't have to swing the bats when your pitchers are walking them 10 times.
Yeah. They can get on base, that's for sure. It was just so frustrating to follow that game yesterday and get into a situation where you listen to your manager afterwards and he's like, oh yeah, both teams were struggling. Yeah, not really. If it was a struggle fight last night, were the team trying to struggle.
7 runs and they struggled.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
That's off-putting. Now, Sam, you had an interesting thing happen a minute ago involving the game that was just mentioned. Skip it.
Yeah.
Somebody called you?
Yeah, he just said, Mark from up north. And then I was like, okay, like, what would you like to talk about, Mark? And he just instantly was like, yeah, I'll just record this for the guys. And before I could even say I couldn't record a live phone call on the phone, he started singing the Skip It song for me, and I couldn't even stop him. He was on a roll, and he had it.
And now kids come get around. Wait, he would sing all this?
Yeah, and he sang it, like, perfectly, the tone, rhythm, and everything.
There's a counter on this ball.
Skip it. I remember that part.
Skip it from Tiger Toys.
He didn't say new and improved, but wow. He had the other part, yeah.
That catchphrase, though, not catchphrase, but that...
You know, counter on the ball.
No, the from Tiger Toys. Yeah. Like, wow, I just was 5 years old again, all over. That's wild. Now, who was better at singing, though? Was it Mark from up north, whatever, or Mark from right in front of you, who did the Crocodile Mile theme song? You run, you slide, you hit the bump and take a dive.
Okay, I say you.
Bam.
I like the passion.
Thanks, Sam.
What do you do when you see a crocodile? You run, you slide, you hit the bump and take a dive. It's Crocodile Mile, the great water slide with splashdown pool. And the incredible
food. There you go.
Mark, the way you did the dive reminded me of, what's his name, Jack Black from School of Rock.
Oh, yeah, sure, okay.
And I loved it.
He's one of my rock influences, I guess. No, but this came up because of the slip and slide that the tarp was on the field last night. John Clark tweeted out the video of the guy running about, right? And I'm looking at it, and I'm just like, you know, that does make me think of slip and slide. It makes me think, like, do kids today know slip and slide? We know that people still have waterbeds, Trey. We know that that's still a thing.
That's good.
People are still enjoying the waterbeds, hey, which is awesome.
That's right. Sam said her dad had one.
Yeah.
Yeah, the stork didn't drop her off.
It was high tide.
Yeah, that's right. High tide.
A little bit.
Hang 10.
Justin and Fulcroft, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Justin?
What's going on, guys? Great show today.
Thanks, man.
I want to talk about the Eagles and their record. I'm looking at probably 11 wins, but the thing that really has me worried is that our secondary is the same. We had some real issues last year with the secondary. Is there anybody that they could pick up for just a little bit more experience in the background that, you know, that's still sitting on the free agent list?
Nobody jumps to mind. And whenever we ask Adam Schefter about that, and we have him on every Friday, like, nobody jumps out to him either, because it's all about talent evaluation or the roster. And they're not looking to add until they lose somebody to injury. So when it comes to upgrading that position, they're going to rely on what they've really relied on for years. It's the trenches. It's your defensive line getting the push up front with guys like Fletcher Cox, Malik Jackson, and Tim Jernigan. Derek Barnett stepping up to have a year that is a guy that's worthy of a first-round pick. And then watching your secondary kind of fall into place after that. So they're kind of built from the inside out, which most teams strive for that. But I think they're going to be okay secondary-wise. I saw this team, like I mentioned earlier, with Rasul Douglas take steps forward last year, and I think he's actually going to be a pretty solid corner this year for you.
Right. I think Rasul Douglas should definitely be starting and taking all the snaps that he can. But, you know, we'll see how Sidney Jones works out. Mm-hmm. The other thing I want to talk about is how are we going to fix the Phillies? Because right now I would take any double-A college pitcher over our nasty, ridiculous pitching squad, because I could literally fart better than they can pitch.
Congratulations.
Well, I think you would have more practice than anyone pitching, but that's neither here nor there. I don't know if they go with Adonis Medina. I don't know if they end up calling him up before the year's out. It's certainly something they've done in the past. But I don't know if they're looking at anybody in their minor leagues other than Alec Boehm to help him this year. Like, Boehm is a guy I don't even see coming up till September if he comes up at all. But I thought I was going to be, who was it, Matt Breen we had on? I thought I was going to be poo-pooed when I brought up the name Alec Boehm to possibly come up this year. And he was like, yeah, that could definitely happen. You're looking at a guy in September that could come up and at least take some hacks. I didn't think the Phillies were going to try to rush him through the system. But if the guy is earning the promotions and he's already 22, 23 years old, what's the harm in bringing him up?
Question for you. What about Bumgarner? Wasn't there talks about doing something to get him on the squad?
Yeah.
The problem is they're fighting for a playoff position, too. So,
and he's going to cost you.
Yeah. I don't think a Bumgarner trade is going to happen. Like, yeah. In all honesty, I don't see the Phillies making an acquisition.
If they did, I would think Stroman and Robbie Ray, because I think they each have an extra year of arbitration available.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Yeah, everybody wants a second year of control.
Yeah, you better, because we're realistically probably not playing for much this year.
No, and I think the Phillies realize that.
Yeah.
And I made this point earlier. It's such a crazy thing to look at in the excitement that we had in the offseason, and then the regular season hit. What you were banking on has not panned out.
Yeah,
you were banking in the starting pitching after Aaron Nola to be okay. That's what you were banking on, for it to be okay. And it's been abysmal. You have the 11th best ERA, 11th best, excuse me. You have the fifth worst or fourth worst ERA for starting pitcher in the National League.
Mm.
Yeah, that's not exactly what you were hoping for. You were hoping for at least, you know, upper, you know, the first, eight or better, right? That's all you basically need.
Top half.
Top half, exactly. So that hasn't panned out for the Phillies. They're a bad baseball team. You keep waiting for them to hit some kind of stride. This pitching isn't going to turn around. The hitting isn't going to be consistent all year or for the rest of the year. They're not going to be a playoff team this year. And it breaks my heart to say it because I was looking forward to some playoff baseball. I think what the Phillies are telling us this year is that this offseason they acquired everything they could to see what they have for the year. And then the next offseason is when they'll start adding arms.
Totally agree.
They're an incomplete team. 610-632-0975. 610-632-0975. I'll tell you right now, Trey, I want to run through those starting corners with you again, because I want to go over the Ronald Darby and the Jalen Mills and Sidney Jones and all that, and whether or not Rasul Douglas can be the guy to take that major step forward. And if you do have a game from yesteryear, that's what we're doing today. We're talking about those games, those things that you could do in the outdoors, such as slip and slide. And we mentioned Skip It earlier, which is just phenomenal. If you have a game from yesteryear that you want to bring up today in honor of the slip and slide from last night, we'll get into that, and we'll also talk a little bit more birds coming up in a few here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
I haven't forgotten at all that the Eagles only have one open training camp practice. I haven't forgotten that. I didn't want to talk about this today. It wasn't on the agenda.
Are you going to the Vic Fangio quotes?
Yeah. Did you see what this guy just tweeted us?
Wow.
I want to give this guy a shout out here. This person a shout out. KMC on Twitter, McCormick 1978, tweets the show here. Oh, God, I'm going to butcher this name. It's Nikki Havala. She covers the Denver Broncos, and she's covering Vic Fangio here. And I didn't realize this, but the Broncos have the most open practices in the NFL.
I think it's 19.
19 training camp practices that will be open to fans this year, the most in the league. The Eagles had this great tradition, as many NFL teams did, of going to a college or something. And Trey, I'm sorry, I'm going to talk about training camp for a second.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a wonderful tradition where I got to go, because I didn't get to go to the Link a lot. I didn't get to go to the Vet a lot as a kid. But I would go up to training camp every year. My dad and I'd go up, or a friend of mine would go up, and we'd watch training camp. I remember going to Westchester, right? And I remember going to Lehigh. But it was just great memories. And now that was taken away, and they said, all right, well, basically the trade-off is going to be we're going to have open practices in the Link. So you can still get the opportunity to see the players up close and personal, where a lot of fans can't do that throughout the season. So the Eagles, as we know, about a month and a half ago, cut it back to one open training camp practice that they are charging admission for.
I had luckily blacked it out that even happened, and then the Vic Fangio quote just, like, brought me right back in.
Here's what brought me. This has come up for me in a couple of different circles where people have asked me about it. I'll just say that. And I think it's still a disgrace. To only have one is a disgrace. To only have one that you're charging. Bottom line, like, whatever you're doing with the money, fine. But you're still charging fans admission to go to the open training camp practice. And then you see these quotes this guy just sent me here, KMC, and Jamie, I think you were tagged as well. Vic Fangio was asked about the open training camp practices, 19 the Broncos are having, the most in the NFL. He said, I didn't realize that we had the most, but I think it's a good thing to have fans out there to watch the practices. The history of the NFL, you had to go to college campuses back in the day because the NFL facilities didn't look like this, look like they do now. When I first went to the Saints in the mid-80s, we had an 80-yard grass field, no cafeteria. Guys would go to a greasy deli for lunch right across the street, so we were there. We're focused on a small college campus to go out there for 2-a-days because they had a great cafeteria, because they had classrooms, because they had the dorms to set up to sleep in. Byproduct of that was the fans could come and watch. I think one of the things, small thing, that has driven the NFL to being the most popular sport in the country is that you let people come and watch practice. People that maybe can't afford to go to the game and maybe can't get an autograph from a player, maybe they can go to a training camp session and actually shake hands with the players, get an autograph, meet, get a sweatband or a glove from a player. You do that with a young person, you got a fan for life. And football has a fan for life. There's more to be gained out of that than any advertising slogan or any commercial that you could put on TV. Does that not sum it up perfectly?
Yeah, it's perfect.
That's a football lifer, Vic Fangio talking.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's no question. That's 19 practices.
Seriously, if you got a sweatband or a glove from a player when you're like anywhere through age 8 through like 16, mm-hmm. you're there to death.
This made it on camera. So it's on repeat a lot whenever the T.O. and Donovan McNabb era and Trey, of course. Mm-hmm. Whenever this gets brought up, I was right there for it. I'll never forget it. When Donovan was brushing the shoulders off of T.O., like, hey, let me keep my guy clean.
Yep.
Let me keep my guy polished up and ready to go. Let me take care of my guy. I was right there. I was standing right there, like right on the fence watching that happen.
Mm.
And I'll never forget that as long as I live. Mm. I'll never forget that as long as I live.
Yeah.
Watching you out there, Trey.
You know what?
Walk by. I remember, wow, that guy's a giant.
Just walking outside, just to go get our breakfast and just the heavy, the wet air. How hot and muggy it was reminded me of when we walked out of the dorms.
Yeah, we just walked outside now, and I said to Trey, does this feel like training camp?
It's just like, oh, God, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It just brought back that feeling like, dang, this reminds me of walking around or through Lehigh, that little, when you look up in the trees and you have the clouds, the little fog or whatever that is, or whatever, just hovering over the trees and how thick and heavy the air was, and just knowing that Big Red is about to put his foot all up out behind. It's about to go down.
That is nothing short of
it was awesome.
Nothing short of amazing.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It was fun, man. You know, you miss having that environment and having that. The one thing I mean, training camp sucked, just having to go through it, but. You know, having the interaction with the fans, you know, being able to have that type of, you know, support out there watching you put in work, you know, it was fun to have people around like that.
Maybe shake hands with a player, right. Maybe get a sweatband or a glove. You do that with a young person, you have a fan for life, and football is a fan for life. There's more to be gained out of that than any advertising slogan or any commercial you could put on TV. Vic Fangio and having 19.
Thanks for getting it, Vic.
Open practices.
It's small, but it's like,
but
thank
it's
you.
Not. If
thank
it's,
you.
If it's something that's a memory that'll last forever, is it small?
No.
No, it's a big deal to
but
us.
But that fact that he gets it.
You know what? You know what it allows?
To him, that's kind of a small thing in his day-to-day life and operations as a head coach.
Mm.
So for him to acknowledge it, get it, and understand the fans, that's awesome.
Well, the thing that is wild here is that he's talking about coming to watch practice. If you're a fan... And you say, well, you know, I was at practice and I was watching DeSean Jackson. Yeah, he hasn't lost a step. Or, hey, I was at practice and I was watching Miles Sanders. Man, that kid hits the hole rather quick. You know what I mean? You say it as a fan, you feel like you're an insider.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, like, hey, I went up to Lehigh. I saw that kid. I'll tell you what's what.
Yeah. Or how about, and I remember this one time being up there. I was covering training camp. And a fan yelled out something as Donovan was about to go under center. And he stopped and he turned to the fan, like pointed and yelled back, like, yeah, I hear you. Like, just something silly like that. That fan will never forget that. You know, and he'll be watching a game in week 5 and say, remember when Donovan yelled at me, talked to me at training camp? Like, that's invaluable. Taking the kids up there. And I told you before, Rick Burkholder, I had a bunch of kids up there with some friends. He belonged to our pool. We were friends. He took the kids into the locker room. They met the players. You know, they'll never, ever forget that. And now you just don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're playing a dangerous game if you start the disconnect game. It'll probably never happen here in Philadelphia because of the loyalty of the fans, but why tempt it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it at all.
It's just something that's so blatantly wrong.
Yeah,
that I don't know how the Eagles, who are so great with this, usually have this blind spot right now.
Where did it come from?
Something bigger. There's got to be a better explanation out there. I'm hoping in the days leading up to this, we can get somebody from the Eagles on to address this situation because I know people still have a lot of questions about it. And we'll get Trey back in training camp too. We'll just do that. Now, I promised this before the break.
Wait, did we talk? Trey, are you going to go to camp or is it too traumatic?
No, I'm not going to camp.
Okay.
What for?
I just stop by, see what's going on.
Maybe Andre Dillard's going on. Maybe he's listening.
I know exactly what's going on.
But doesn't it give you satisfaction to watch somebody else go through the pain that you had to go through for so many years and knowing you don't have to do it?
No,
not at all.
No, I don't feel like standing out there as hot. I'm good. I'd rather go play some golf. I don't want to go to training camp.
You are.
That's awesome.
So it was the one mini camp, and now you're good.
Yeah, I'm good.
Will you go during the season and look at like watch practice? Anything like that?
No. Why? I don't need to go watch practice. I know what a Wednesday practice is going to look like. Thursday, Friday, I got the schedule.
Maybe you'll go there and turn the lights off for old time's sake.
No, I'm good.
610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. Let's get back to that secondary. I mentioned this before the break. Can this secondary take a step forward from last year? Because you have Rasul Douglas. Like, the thing that's amazing from last year, all the injuries have led to other guys starting, obviously. But watching those guys start last year for you, you watch them, I felt, get better and better and better. Sidney Jones, though, I thought, left a lot to be desired because he just seems like a guy who is going to be often injured. And that's not something you can really rely on in the NFL, as we all know. So you look at guys like Rasul Douglas, you look at guys like Avonte Maddox, and then you look at the guys that are supposed to be the slotted starters right now with Ronald Darby and Jalen Mills. But it looks like you're saying, Trey, that they might be looking more so at Sidney Jones to take over spot.
Right now, you have left cornerback is what they have, Jalen Mills starting, you have Rodney McLeod, you have Malcolm Jenkins, Darby at the other corner, and then they have this other Sidney Jones. So, yeah, I mean, you know,
the slot cornerback is what, Trey? On the field, I'd have to guess 75-80% of the time as it is. mm-hmm. in today's NFL. So yeah, Sidney Jones would essentially be a starter.
Yeah, so that's the way they have it listed right there with Sidney Jones. You know, Rasul Douglas really definitely came on towards the end. He didn't start off being, you know, he started off the season being a palms up guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you make a bad play, you put your palms up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, don't be a palms up guy. But you know.
Do you think, is he a poor practice player or something? Because when he is in games, you're talking Rasul?
Yeah.
He seems to produce and be mm-hmm. kind of a ball hawk. Like, is there something they would see in practice that would give them hesitation? Like, is the palms up part of that?
I don't know. I know that during some of the preseason games, I noticed that palms up type thing going on. And I'm like, oh, you know, you don't want to be with that type of guy. But you know what? He started getting better as the more he played, he got better. And it's just one of those things where, you know, you're going to have to mix and match your guys in there. You know, we're going to need to see what Jalen Mills, how is he coming back?
Yeah.
You know, you can't play for this defensive line to be what you need them to be. Our secondary has to get up and play a little bit more press. They have to get physical. You know, you can't sit back, especially in this era now where quarterbacks would dink and dunk you right down the field. So, you know, for our defensive line to get home, our secondary needs to play a little bit more physical to get rid of all of the cushion that they give up.
Okay. All right, hey, coming up in this segment, before we hit the break, because we're going to have Jason Stark on at 8:50 today from Cooperstown. Jamie, I heard you talking about this in the 5. Mm-hmm. I saw this little thing that's going into the Hall of Fame.
How cool is that?
It might be the coolest thing possibly in the Hall of Fame.
Yes, yeah, I agree.
Really might be.
Soon to be.
And there's a ton of cool stuff in there.
And there's a question we have to ask Jason Stark that not enough people are talking about, because it might be the biggest controversy in the history of Cooperstown in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Whoa. Jason's a 2-time Hall of Famer this week. Cooperstown and the Philadelphia Sports Hall of Fame
right.
elected him.
Well,
so he gets the double dip in Hall of Fames.
But have you heard about the controversy?
No.
Everyone's talking about it in Cooperstown.
No.
But it's surrounding Jason Stark.
He hit a deer on his way up there. Is it that? Is PETA after him?
Uh-oh.
Oh, jeez.
Because that's why he couldn't come on Monday. He was dealing with a mangled-up car.
It's not that, but now they will be. Thanks. No, the controversy is whether or not his Hall of Fame plaque will have the mustache or not.
Ooh.
Everyone's raged about it. Like, people are talking. Like, it's just nuts.
I would recommend he go stash.
I think you have to go stash.
It was a strong stash.
Like, everybody, like, not that Jason is at all past his prime. He's still very much in his prime, but his prime of prime was mustache Jason Stark.
Yeah, I agree.
Mustache and a little bit of a fro.
There was a little fro.
And,
you know, you ain't fooling me none. There's a little mullet back there. I know what was going on.
Uh-huh.
There's a little mullet on the curl back there. I know what was happening. We'll ask Jason Stark about that coming up in a little bit. And we'll also, before we get out of here for this for the commercial, Jamie has one of the most incredible things to ever be in the Hall of Fame. Nicolo?
Yes.
Parkwood, what's up?
What's up, buddy? I want to talk about the Eagles.
Go for it.
Let's go, baby. Miles Sanders is hurt.
Yeah, he still has like a soft tissue thing going on.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What's up with that? When's he coming back?
Hopefully he's ready for camp.
Yeah,
I haven't heard anything.
Yeah, he missed all of OTAs, but
didn't play at all. And they were saying that Doug Peterson said, I think the last mini camp and OTA, he said that it was all for precaution. He was doing well, but precautionary reasons, they held him out.
Yeah, I hear you. Me and my dad and my whole family always watch the Eagles together. We go to the games. We love the Eagles, man. I just wanted to spread the word that I love them. And, you know, I just wanted to talk to you guys. I know you guys are talking about, and, you know.
Is it Nicolo or is it Nicolo?
Nicolo.
Nicolo. There we go.
Nicolo. Okay. Yeah. Nicolo, who's your favorite Eagle of all time?
Brian Dawkins, baby.
There we go. I was going to guess that. That's awesome.
Second is Trey Thomas.
Are you guys? Are you going to training camp?
I want to. Where is it at?
It's at the link.
When?
I forget the date of the open practice. Yeah, August is like August 11th or something like that.
It's free?
No, you got to pay $10 and it's going to
it's
a charity. Yeah.
Oh, I'm going for sure.
There you go. See that? Thank you.
How about FanFest? You want to go to FanFest?
Yeah, let's get that's what I meant to do there. Yeah, hey, oh, damn it.
Nicolo.
Nicolo, you want to go to FanFest?
Yeah, of course.
Do you love the Eagles?
I love the Eagles.
Can I get an Eagles chant?
Fly, Eagles, fly, on the road to victory. E-N-G-L-E-S, Eagles!
That's beautiful.
That's
you're
awesome.
Going to FanFest. See that?
Look you at gotta
that.
Love it, folks.
The inspiration, ladies and gentlemen. Jamie, hit me with this because this is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
This is a piece of memorabilia that's going into the Hall of Fame.
Sorry, is the exact?
What?
I don't know.
Pack of zigzags. Now, they're more easy wide people. I think it's already up. It'll probably, I don't know, I guess the wing of the new inductees will probably get revealed, you know, maybe this weekend on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
But what it is a ball from the 2008 All-Star Game. And if you see the ball, it's retweeted on my account. I'll retweet it from the station account so everybody can see it. It's just three pen marks across the seams diagonally. And when you first see it, you're like, okay, what? All right, that's weird. And then it says on the plaque, this ball is from the 2008 All-Star Game where Mariano Rivera taught Roy Halladay his cutter. And he drew the marks on the ball so that Roy could keep the exact grip of the ball and stay precise with it throughout wow. his career. And apparently Roy kept this ball with him everywhere he went. It traveled with him on the road. And you know how meticulous he was sure. of a worker. I'm sure he, you know, grabbed that ball several times a day and worked on that cutter. Because Doc's wow. cutter, nobody ever had Mariano's cutter and nobody ever will. It was probably, if not the nastiest pitch in all of baseball history, right. certainly up there. But Doc's was pretty good when it was on.
Yeah.
And the fact, and it also says on the plaque that Mariano Rivera was fined by his teammates for teaching the then AL East rival his most deadly pitch.
All right.
I love that.
What was the fine?
I don't know. You know, it was probably like, dude, come on, man. I got a hit against that guy.
Did you have to, like, wash everybody's car? Yeah. Like, what was the fine?
I don't know.
And like,
I'm sure they donated it or something.
If
you know?
You're Mariano Rivera, though, and they're like, dude, you taught Roy Halladay that pitch? And I'm sure Rivera was just like, first off, my father was a fisherman, because I think you have to say that every time you talk about Rivera. And then second, you have to say, dude, it's the Blue Jays. All right, back off. All right? We got to face him a couple of times a year. Then we got the rest of the squad. We're fine.
Yeah,
back
it was
off.
It was donated by Brandy Halladay to the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. It looks like the most simple thing in the world, but it's one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
Do you remember they used to sell the ball that
yep,
had the
I remember
grips
it.
On
yep,
it?
Sure.
And I remember
one was like blue, one was red, one was orange,
it was
one
like
was
blue
green
for the fastball grip, and like green
two
was like
seam,
the
four seam. It, yeah, it was cool.
I remember looking at the two seam and four seam and be like, really? Do you have to? It should be pretty obvious, but like you don't need to number that one. But I also remember they had a grip. That was, or maybe it was a base. Maybe I'm missing. Maybe it was a baseball card, but it had the picture of how like Nolan Ryan threw his fastball.
Yeah,
that was pretty cool. Or how whoever it might have been would throw his curveball, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like that was pretty wild as well. I used to get ticked off
because if it was a left-hander, I'd be like, "What the hell?" Because I couldn't figure out how to reverse it to my right hand.
Learn how to throw left.
Right. Yeah.
Coming up in a little bit, we're going to talk to Jason Stark from Cooperstown, and we'll settle the major controversy. Will his Hall of Fame plaque? By the way, I don't think Reuters get a plaque, but anyway, will they get a mustached plaque for Jason Stark? We'll also talk about Roy Halladay going in, Mike Mussina, and one of the coolest things I've ever heard about a baseball player that's going in, Edgar Martinez, his training regimen. Trey, I don't know if you know, this was one of the most incredible things I've ever heard about somebody trying to get ready for a season. Mm-hmm. We'll jump into that in a few here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
8 o'clock hour, of course, brought to you by Martin Law, the law firm for injured workers. Visit paworkinjury.com. Trey, you said when you played in Jacksonville, were there people hitting you up for tickets?
Not really.
Not really? You were all right there?
Yeah.
I've heard that can be a problem for people playing near their hometown.
Yeah.
Like, I talked to Corey Clement about it before.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yep, you get the requests. Josh Adams is from the area. He gets the requests, right?
Yeah.
Well, Jason Stark, I don't know if this is the first time in his career. Apparently, there are a lot of people up there showing their support for him, as they should be. And without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Jason Stark is going to join us here from wonderful, beautiful, tropical Cooperstown, New York, and he's brought to us by Xfinity. Stay connected during the biggest moments of every game with Xfinity Internet, delivering reliably fast speeds even during peak hours when everyone's online. Learn more at Xfinity.com. I'm going to go jump the gun here. Ladies and gentlemen, the Hall of Famer, two times over, Mr. Jason Stark from The Athletic. Good morning, Jason.
Mark, I think that's the first time the phrase tropical Cooperstown.
I was there once. I know it's not tropical, but it is usually pretty balmy Hall of Fame weekend. And now 1:30 Sunday, you're getting inducted, man. And look, I have admired your career from afar. It's been my absolute pleasure to be able to interview you over the last couple of weeks here at baseball season, last couple of months of baseball season. We're so appreciative for you to come on with us, especially when you got everything going on up there. But I'm told you have, what, 100 people up there to support you?
I will. First of all, just for the record, my ceremony is actually 4:30 on Saturday afternoon.
Okay.
They honor the writer and the broadcaster separately now in their own ceremony. So by 4:30 Saturday, I'll be looking out into the expanse of beautiful double day field. And I mean, just about everybody that I've ever known in my life will be sitting in front of me.
Wow.
Pretty crazy, man. It really is.
That's all. Jason, I want to go back to the beginning here, because I know there's people listening. I was a kid listening to sports talk radio in Philadelphia and reading the articles and all that stuff, a lot of them from you. If you could talk to the kids right now that want to get into this business, they want to be a writer, what advice would you give someone who wants to be a sports writer?
You know, I tell this story all the time, because I'm not one of those kids that wanted to grow up and be a baseball player. I grew up wanting to be a baseball writer. I mean, honestly, from the time I was 10 years old, that's what I wanted to be. And it's crazy to me that I literally lived that dream. I lived the life that I dreamed of from the time I was old enough to dream anything. And I would just wish that for anybody out there who can dream those kinds of dreams. The world has changed. The media business has changed. The places you write and the way you write and what you write about, all of that has changed. But those dreams still come true. And I mean, I can just tell you that what I tell kids all the time who want to do this is, you know, pick out those writers or those broadcasters or those morning talk show hosts that you most love, and don't just read them, listen to them, watch them. You need to study them and try to figure out what makes them so good at what they do. Why do you enjoy their work so much? You know, when I was trying to become a baseball writer, I read all the great sports writers in Philadelphia. I also studied a guy named Peter Gammons, and I tell Peter all the time, he made my entire life possible, because everything I did, he did it first and better.
Everything?
That's absolutely incredible. And maybe you can help us with something here. So the Hall of Fame ceremony for the writers, broadcasters, that's getting moved up. That's going to be on Saturday, you said, 4:30?
It's Saturday at 4:30 for anyone who is planning a trip to Cooperstown. I'd love to look out into the stands and see a lot of red shirts and familiar faces. It's then going to be aired on TV on Sunday morning, I believe it is, between 11 and 12, my speech. I'm sure you can find it somewhere on YouTube. I think it's on MLB.com, streaming. If you want to stop everything you're doing Saturday and watch my speech, I'm sure you can find it somewhere.
Of course. But now, I don't know if this is true or not, but I've heard conflicting reports that writers that writers are now getting busts and plaques in the Hall of Fame. So we want to know, are you going in with a mustache or not a mustache? You answer the question.
You know, this is funny. This keeps coming up. My son asked me that yesterday.
Are you serious?
There is no bust. There is no plaque. There will be a photo. I should really try to maintain the suspense level, shouldn't I? Whether there's a mustache in the photo.
No, you're going to tease us. You're going to tease us, Jason.
All right, I'll tell you. There's no mustache. And Since it's Thursday, I don't think I have time to grow one between now and Saturday.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know, Jason. You might have that that capability. now you're going in. Go ahead.
It is incredible all the people who believe that my mustache was actually my finest career achievement. Might be right.
Jason, you're the best.
Is there a mustache Hall of Fame?
If there is, Jason's a first ballot. Jason's a first ballot. But Jason, I have to ask you this because you're going in with an incredible class. One of them, obviously, we know near and dear, and I want to talk about him in a second, and Roy Halladay. But Edgar Martinez had one of the most incredible training regimens I've ever seen of any athlete ever. And I teased this before the break. He would write numbers on tennis balls. Trey, did you know about this?
Yeah.
And he would put him in the pitching machine and just stand there and just go 7, boom, 6, boom, 2, boom. That guy had the most, like Ted Williams had incredible eyes, was known for that. Edgar Martinez is right there.
So true. And, you know, I bet if you did a study of the greatest hitters who ever lived, they'd have the greatest vision of any athlete who ever played anything. Because, you know, we talk about hand-eye and bat-to-ball skill. Where does that come from? The ability to read pitches out of a pitcher's hand is one of the fundamental keys to being a great hitter. I think the genius of the Edgar was it felt like he was never fooled. Why was that? You know, you only have a fraction of a second to decide whether to swing or not. You only have a fraction of a second to recognize what kind of pitch and what kind of spin you're seeing on the way to home plate. And Edgar just had that amazing gift to recognize and to read that the greatest hitters have. I wrote a book once upon a time about the most overrated and underrated players of all time, and Edgar was my most underrated DH of all time. By getting into the Hall of Fame, does he lose the underrated thing?
No, if anything, you're now championing his cause. 418 career on base percentage for Edgar Martinez. I want to move on here real quick and talk a little bit about Roy Halladay and the story. We actually just talked about this with Mariano Rivera, the ball going into the Hall of Fame, or at least being on display, that Mariano Rivera gave Roy Halladay to show him the grip of his cutter.
Yeah, Tyler Kepner posted a photo of this ball on Twitter. Really look it up, and saw Tyler yesterday. Actually went to dinner with him last night, and we were talking about this. It's an incredible story. The Yankees actually fined Mariano Rivera for teaching Roy Halladay how to throw that pitch.
how do you fine him? What do you fine a guy for that?
It was a kangaroo court, so I'm guessing, you know, he didn't need to go into Chapter 11. here's the story. Mariano Rivera teaches Roy Halladay his signature pitch, the cutter. And it really helped change Halladay's whole career, because what made Halladay so unhittable was, and I just talked about hitters trying to read the pitch. All right, here came a pitch that you knew was going to sink, but you didn't know if it was going to be that two-seamer that was going to break towards you as a right-handed hitter, or that cutter that was going to break away from you as a right-handed hitter. It didn't happen until so close to home plate. So here was this pitch that came out of the same plane, looked exactly the same to the hitter, but could break in two dramatically different ways. So once Roy Halladay learned that pitch, he was a different guy. And once he learned it, he wanted to make sure that he never lost it. So he traced the grip on a baseball, and he stuffed that baseball in his equipment bag, and he carried it with him everywhere. And now that ball is going to be on display in the Hall of Fame. It's an amazing artifact.
Yeah, that's incredible. One more I want to ask you about that I'm going to say you're going in with it, Hall of Famer.
That's
Jason
right.
Stark. The other one is Mike Mussina. One of the craziest things in an era where guys would still regularly win 20 games, right? Mike Mussina didn't win 20 games until his 18th season, his 18th and final season in his MLB career. He had, talk about under the radar, underrated type guys. I think he's one of them.
Absolutely. And it took him way too long to actually get into the Hall of Fame.
retired 11 years ago. You know, I think he's a testament to just consistent greatness. If you're going to ask me, what's the greatest long-term free agent contract to any pitcher ever, I'm going to say it's him. When he signed with the Yankees, it was, let me see here, 8-year deal with an option. So he was there for 9 years. Every one of them, double-digit wins, winning record, consistent excellence. It's just, you know, look, you're watching the Phillies now, and you know that consistency, dependability, reliability is one of the most important qualities in sports, in life for that matter. And that was Mike Mussina. You could depend on that guy. And, you know, Tyler made an incredible point about him in his book and in a presentation that he gave at the Hall of Fame yesterday, which is Mike Mussina won more than half his starts. Is any pitcher ever going to do that again in an age where pitcher wins are so devalued and, you know, pitchers are taken out of the game in the fifth inning, sixth inning? You might not ever see that again.
No, I don't think you will. That's incredible. And also, I mean, are we going to see a career over 18 years where you make at least 25 starts a season in every year you play?
Exactly. You know, that ability to just take the ball, that's another one of those qualities.
Yeah, man.
Just completely undervalued, more now than ever.
Jason, who is the next person to get inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame whose name will have been attached to the Philadelphia Phillies? Now it's looking into the future.
That's a really good question. You know, I think we're going to have a spirited debate about Utley and Rollins. Cole Hamill's still playing. It's not out of the question. I personally think that Jimmy Rollins has a slightly better case than Chase. I think there are a lot of people who disagree. They both should be on the ballot for a long time, and you never know what might happen. Perspectives change in that 10-year journey on the ballot, but you know, it's certainly possible that the 2008 Phillies are going to be one of those rare World Series teams that has no Hall of Famers. And yet, they had this collection of the greatest players in the history of their franchise, which has existed since the 19th century. It's really strange, isn't it?
I say Rollins goes in.
Here's my question. Not that I'm a me guy on this particular topic, but who's the next guy who's going to go into the Hall of Fame who's got his own hamburger? I had that happen to me this week.
Really?
Yeah, Paulie's in New York named a burger after me, and in the spirit of Philadelphia, it's a burger stuffed with a cheesesteak.
Get the
wow!
Wait, so it's a burger, but like, is the cheesesteak roll in it as well? Is it two rolls? What's the deal?
There's not two rolls.
Okay, just making sure. I don't
just
know.
Just the steak part.
I've seen donuts that are used for cheeseburgers.
Yeah, it's the I haven't personally eaten one because I've been in Cooperstown all week.
Right.
But I am aware of two people who have eaten it, who they're both related to me, by the way. And they both live.
Oh, there you go.
Is it the Stark Burger?
It's the Jason Stark Hall of Fame Burger.
Oh, nice.
Last thing for you, Jason. I know you've been busy in Cooperstown and all that stuff, but I just have to know your opinion. If you think in 2 weeks the Phillies will be buyers or sellers, where do you see them going?
You know, I don't know that they're going to be traditional buyers, but I'd be shocked if they didn't attempt to do some sort of buying. But the trading deadline, I think the way modern front offices view it has really changed. The trading deadline is a shopping opportunity. And those opportunities don't come around all year long. You know, there are guys that they can trade for right now who can help them beyond this year. Why would they not attempt to shop for those guys? You know, like I don't know where Matthew Boyd's going or whether the Phillies can meet the price, but that's just an example of a pitcher who is getting better, who's got multiple swing and miss pitches, who's under control for more than 3 years, and if he's available now, you know, you got to take your shopping cart and wheel your cart down the aisle of that supermarket. So I'd really be surprised if they do nothing, but I don't see them selling.
Gotcha.
I don't think they're built to sell.
All right. Jason Stark, the Hall of Famer, both Philadelphia Hall of Fame, Sports Hall of Fame, and also Cooperstown, New York Baseball Hall of Fame. Jason, thank you so much for coming on with us, and couldn't be happier for you, man. Congratulations.
Thanks, guys. Really a pleasure to share this with you.
97.5, The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.